geographical locations. And later on, we're going to go back and we're going to talk about several of these countries. But the reason that we're going through this is to kind of give you a mental fix in your mind of some of these areas, because the next thing after we get done with this, which is going to be today, we'll be done with it, we're going to start talking about some of these ancient empires and all. It's really fascinating when you start looking at ancient Babylon and ancient Persia and Greece and so forth. And so now that you've been introduced to these lands, you'll kind of have a better idea where these things are located. But we were talking last session about some of the major rivers, and I think I mentioned four of them, did I not? Tigris, Euphrates, Orontes, and Nile. And the next point that we want to look at are some of the major mountain ranges. Some of the major mountain ranges in Bible land. And so one of the first mountain ranges is the mountains of Ararat. The Bible talks about the mountains of Ararat. And they would be the mountains up here in northern Mesopotamia. And of course, Mount Ararat is the mountain that Noah landed on. They're spelled like this. There's not only just one mountain, but actually a mountain range. They're located in eastern Armenia, about midway between the Caspian and the Black Seas. Here's the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea, and the Ararat Mountains are located right up in this region right there. And so they actually are quite high, and this is the traditional resting place of Noah's Ark, as we see in Genesis chapter 8. Then there's another mountain range called the Zagros Mountain. The Zagros. And Ararat is spelled A-R-A-R-A-T. Zagros is Z-A-G-R-O-S. The Zagros Mountains, they are east of the Tigris River. Tigris River. The Tigris River is right here, flowing down into the Persian Gulf, and the Zagros Mountains is this mountain range, a very rugged mountain range, flowing right to the east of the Tigris River, or I should say located right to the east of the Tigris River. They reach an elevation, an average one of about 9,000 feet, so they are quite high. They also form a boundary between the ancient countries of Assyria and Media. Media is right here and Assyria is right here, with the Zagros Mountains right down in between them. Then there's another mountain chain called the Taurus Mountains, and then the Anti-Taurus. The Taurus and the Anti-Taurus. And the Taurus Mountains, really the word Taurus means silver. Silver mountains, so called because they're very high and they're covered with snow, and they often look like they are silver. They're along the southern coast of Asia Minor, right here. This is the side of Asia Minor, and the Taurus Mountains are right along the bottom edge of Asia Minor here. Very, very high mountains. Some of them reach as high as 12,250 feet. Now, that's pretty high, especially coming right up off of sea level. That's just a couple thousand feet shy of Mount Rainier. And they're jutting right up off the ocean like that, right there on the southern coast of Asia Minor. Those would be the Taurus Mountains. And then they're just north of the city of Tarsus, which is not marked on our map, but the city of Tarsus is right on the coast, which, of course, is where Paul was born. So Paul really was born and grew up right at the foot of these mountains. And you can cross them and get into them through what is called the Cilician Gates. And there's a little mountain pass here. You come up through northern Syria and so forth and drop into the Cilician Gates, and it's a mountain pass, and then you're right into the heart of Asia Minor, which later became known as Galatia and so forth. And then there are the Anti-Taurus Mountains, and they're not marked on our map, but the Anti-Taurus Mountains are just north of the main Taurus Range, and there are the mountains located right up in this region, right up in here, and so forth. So they're just really an extension of the Taurus Mountains, but they're inland a little bit from Asia Minor. They're called the Anti-Taurus Mountains. And then down south of the Taurus Mountains, there's a range of mountains called the Lebanon Mountains. The Lebanon Mountains. And so looking on our map, they are where the modern country of Lebanon is located. It's north of Palestine. And really there's a dual range here. There's really two parallel ranges, and they are found in Syria and Palestine. And there are what are called the Lebanons, and they're on the west. And then the Anti-Lebanons are on the east. And there are two mountains side by side like this, with a river flowing down through the middle of them. So the Lebanons and the anti-Lebanons. And in between these two ranges, there's a very fertile valley called the Valley of Lebanon, and it's mentioned in Joshua chapter 11, Joshua 11, verse 17. Joshua 11, 17. Then there is one mountain that is actually a spur of the anti-Lebanon mountains. That is, it's a southern section of them. It's called Mount Hermon. And Mount Hermon is located in northern Palestine. I don't see it on our map here. But at any rate, it's located somewhere in this region here. Would be Mount Hermon. And it's about the only really high mountain in all of Palestine. It's about 9,000 feet. And that would be located actually right outside the boundaries of Palestine. But you can see it pretty much from most of northern Israel. It's about 9,000 feet tall, and during most of the year it's snow-clad. Well, let's move on now. Let's talk about the primary Bible lands, the actual lands of the Bible themselves. And then, like I mentioned later on, some of these lands we're going to go back. We're going to spend a lot of time on them. The first Bible land that we're going to mention is the land of Armenia. The land of Armenia. And that's spelled A-R-M-E-N-I-A. And Armenia is a high plateau and a mountainous region just southeast of the Black Sea and just north of Assyria. So if we look on our map here, this area right in through here is called Armenia, just south of the Black Sea, just north of Assyria. You'll also see it on ancient maps. You'll see it marked as the land of Urartu. When you see Urartu on a map, you're really looking at ancient Armenia, Urartu. And of course, this again is where Noah and his sons left the ark, Urartu. Then there's another Bible land called Media, the land of Media. And that's spelled M-E-D-I-A, Media. The people that lived in Media were called the Medes, or the Medians. And they inhabited the region just northeast of ancient Babylon. So you notice on our map right here, here's the land of Media, and it's just south of the Caspian Sea. And ancient Babylon's right here, and Media is right there. And at one time they were a very, very powerful people situated between the Caspian Sea and the Zagros Mountains. And they were settled by a man called Madai, who was the son of Japheth, who in turn was one of the sons of Noah. That's seen in Genesis chapter 10. In verse 2, Genesis chapter 10 and verse 2. Later on, we find that it was Media that joined with the Persians that orchestrated the fall of ancient Babylon. So they joined together with Persia to overthrow Babylon. Then another major country, I won't write this one down on the board, you can spell it yourself, but it's Persia. Very fascinating country. Persia, southeast of Media and off our map. So now you're left to the devices of your imagination. But it's this country right over here. And so it'd be right about there. And that's the ancient region of Media, southeast of Media, north of the Persian Gulf. It became a world power under a king called King Cyrus, who, of course, is mentioned in the Bible. And later on, the Persians defeated the Medes and the Lydians and the Babylonians. And then later on, under Cambyses, they gained control of ancient Egypt and eventually were defeated by Alexander the Great. Again, we're going to look at that history later on. Then there's also another entrancing little area called the land of Sumer. Sumer, which is going to be one of the first major regions we talk about. The land of Sumer, spelled S-U-M-E-R. And on our map here, Sumer is actually right close to the Persian Gulf, right in the area of ancient Babylon, Sumer. And they were probably one of the original inhabitants of this area of Mesopotamia, which makes them one of, if not one of the oldest civilizations in the world, the ancient Sumerians. And they found a number of tablets that actually date before the time of the flood. And so during the time of, before the time of the flood, they were writing like 3,000, 3,500 BC. They had writing down as well as a number of other things, very intelligent, very advanced civilization. And then we've got the region called Babylonia. Babylonia, spelled B-A-B-Y-L-O-N-I-A. Now, Babylonia began as a city-state called Babylon. It started off just as a city-state. This was very common in Mesopotamia. They would start off as a powerful city, and they would build walls around it, and then eventually they would evolve into a kingdom. And that's what happened here. It started off as a city-state on the banks of the lower Euphrates River, and later evolved into a powerful kingdom called Babylonia. So there's Babylon, and then eventually it became ancient Babylonia. And then they had a couple different periods in their history. They had a period of rise and prominence under a man called Hammurabi, and then later on they rose in power under Nebuchadnezzar, and eventually they took Judah in 605 BC and destroyed Jerusalem in 586 BC. So the way to look at this is that Babylonia was a country, and Babylon was the capital of that country. But there's times when the whole country itself is called Babylon. So we'll talk about Babylon took the Jews or whatever. We really mean ancient Babylonia. Well, then there's another country called Assyria. Ancient Assyria. Assyria. And located just south of the mountains of Armenia. During the 8th century BC, right before Babylon came to power under Nebuchadnezzar, they controlled the territory all the way from the Persian Gulf over to the Mediterranean Sea. So therefore, the Assyrian kingdom went all the way across the Fertile Crescent and all the way over to the Mediterranean Sea. And of course, they were instrumental in taking northern Israel captive. They are definitely, when you study the Bible, the villains of the Bible. And we'll see why. They were an extremely ungodly, probably some of the most wicked, cruel, atrocious people that have ever graced this late great planet Earth. I tell you, they were not the type of people you want to meet in a dark alley or even in a lighted alley, because they were really wicked, really mean. And then eventually they were defeated by the Babylonians. Then there's another land called the Land of Elam. The Land of Elam. And that's spelled E-L-A-M. The land located right between the Zagros Mountains and the lower Tigris River, just east of ancient Babylonia, located right here, again at the headwaters of the Persian Gulf. Babylonia is right here, and Elam is right beside it. And that was, again, a very powerful country in Bible times, the Land of Elam, just right between the Zagros Mountains and the Tigris River. There's an Elamite capital that was called Susa, spelled S-U-S-A, Susa. Later on, we read about it in the Bible, it's called Shushan. And then at various times, Elam was incorporated into, for example, ancient Assyria, ancient Babylon, and ancient Persia. Cyrus, the founder of ancient Persia, came from the country of Elam. So he was really an Elamite, not a Persian. Okay, and then we have the term Mesopotamia. Spelled M-E-S-O-P-O-T-A-M-I-A, Mesopotamia. What this term Mesopotamia means is between the rivers. Between the rivers. And really what it's used to refer to is the entire area between the Tigris and Euphrates River. It's just kind of a general term. It's really not so much trying to describe one nationality as it is a broad geographical region. And so you've got this huge area of land in between the Tigris River and the Euphrates River. And it's a very, very large expanse of land all along the Fertile Crescent. And this whole region with several different countries in it is called ancient Mesopotamia. Southern section, of course, being occupied by the ancient Babylonians and Sumerians, and the northern section being occupied by the Assyrians. And then there's another ancient kingdom called the Hittites. An ancient Hittites. The Hittites, spelled H-I-T-T-I-T-E-S, the Hittites, right there on the bottom. And they were located in Asia Minor, very powerful kingdom up here, located in this region. The Hittite Empire, also located in Syria and Palestine. And often the Hittites are mentioned in the Bible, in fact, all the way from the times of the patriarchs, Abraham and his descendants, all the way up to the time of the kings. And as we're going to see later on, the interesting thing about them is there was never any archaeological trace of them. And so many of the liberals felt like, well, the Hittites never existed. And since then, they've found lots of proof to show that they did indeed exist. Then there's another country, and you can really confuse this one quite easily. Let me start over on the board here. This is the country of ancient Syria. Syria. It's an entirely different country than Assyria. So you want to make sure you don't confuse the two. You've got the land of Assyria and then the land of Syria. Two different countries. Syria is spelled S-Y-R-I-A. And really, they're located in two entirely different geographical regions. Assyria is located right here, and then Syria is just north of Palestine. In fact, it's still there today. The Syrians, of course, being backed by the Russians, have been constantly invading Lebanon. And the ancient city of Damascus is located in Syria. And they got that term Syria from the Greeks. And when the Greeks came down and conquered this region, they called the tribes living in this region Syria because at one time they had been ruled by the Assyrians. So there is a connection there, but really they're two different groups of people. Now, the Bible name for this area is the land of Aram. So when you read about the land of Aram, you're talking about the same region. Aram, A-R-A-M, or the Aramaeans. And like I mentioned, Damascus is the capital of Syria, and it's the oldest city, I believe, in the world. Very ancient city. Oldest city in the world. Well, then there's another country, and here we're winding down again. There's just a couple more I'm going to mention. The country of Phoenicia. The country of Phoenicia would be another one. The country of Phoenicia is spelled P-H-O-E-N-I-C-I-A. And Phoenicia is located on our map right up here north of Palestine. Now I think maybe I should use a different map. Yes, it's right there. This whole belt of land right to the north of Palestine. Talking about the country that hugs the coast there. And so that would be Phoenicia. And it's right beside the Mediterranean Ocean and the Lebanon Mountains, just north of Palestine, and just south of the Orontes River. So this whole region right here is called the land of Phoenicia. And there was one city, in fact, there's actually two major cities there, but Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon were located in Phoenicia, and they were incredible sailors. They sailed all throughout the Mediterranean Ocean, sailed perhaps as far as Britain, and then sailed perhaps all the way down the coast of Africa, maybe going as far as even the East Indies and so forth. So they were really quite the sailors during that time. Many ancient battles were fought around Tyre and Sidon, the major seaport. And then there's the land of Canaan, the land of Canaan, Canaan's land. And there are really two different thoughts connected with the term Canaan. In a certain technical sense, the word Canaan really refers to a tribe of individuals living in the land of Palestine. They're called the Canaanites. And there were many other tribes. There were the Perizzites and the Amorites and the Jebusites and the Hivites and all the other ites were all living in this land. And so the Canaanites were just one amongst many. But then later on, the term was broadened to include all the land of Palestine west of the Jordan River. So this entire stretch of land now all became known as the land of Canaan. And that's pretty much how we're going to use the term to describe that whole region there, pretty much synonymous with Palestine. And, of course, before it was conquered by Joshua, it was comprised of a large number, again, of city-states. Well, then there's another region called Philistia. Philistia. The land of Philistia, spelled P-H-I-L-I-S-T-I-A. The land of Philistia. And, actually, this is just talking about a very small region of land. It's talking about a little coastal plain right down here in southern Palestine. The Philistines never occupied much land, but they were a very powerful people. And also they were a very advanced people, probably coming from the island of Crete, perhaps, in the Mediterranean Ocean. And they were advanced even beyond the Israelites in a couple of different areas. And that's why, as far as military weapons and so forth, they had a little bit of superiority there. But actually, they lived on a stretch of land only about 15 miles wide and 50 miles long. So not very much land there. 15 miles by 50 miles. One of Israel's, of course, arch enemies. And then the final country that we're going to mention is the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt. And this is located down in northern Africa, right here. The land of Egypt. Along the Nile River in northern Africa, highly diversified culture, began shortly after the flood, always played a major part in Israel's history, and plays a major part, of course, in Bible prophecy. So we'll be looking at that later on, too. Well, that's it for those countries. Now, what I'm going to do, I think maybe tomorrow, actually I used to hand this out as a test, but I'm going to hand out a sheet of paper to you, and I'll let you take it home and you can work on it, and you'll have to go back through and identify these spots on this map, and then you can bring it back and I'll give you a week to do that. Okay? But I do want you to become familiar with these areas. Now, the next and final point that we have in our introduction, I want to summarize Old Testament history for you. Some of you have a fairly good grasp on Old Testament history, and yet others of you probably don't know a whole lot about it. So we're going to be constantly appealing to Old Testament history, and you really need to have just a rudimentary sketch of history in your mind. So we're going to go through Old Testament history real briefly here. Listen very carefully. It's very important, very helpful in fitting the lands and the people together. And so when we talk about these ancient empires, you'll see a lot better how they fit in what period of Israelitish history. Now, some of these things I want you to know, some of the dates. So when I want you to know the date, I'll tell you to put a star beside it, because I do have a little test here made up for you. And if you don't know these dates, well, then you're going to be in dire straits. So I'll tell you which ones have a star on them. If I don't give you one with a star, then don't worry about memorizing the date. Well, let's start way back at creation. Way back at creation, and let's tentatively date creation at 4000 BC. 4000 BC would be creation. And of course, I know that you wouldn't hear that taught at the University of Washington. But I think that that's probably what the Bible chronology teaches about 4000 BC. And with most of these dates now, we have a question mark on them. We don't know precisely the time. They're ballpark figures. But creation 4000 BC, God creating the heavens and the earth and the plants and the animals and man and putting them in paradise. Well, the next major event is the fall of man. Now, of course, with the fall, we have no date. We don't know how long man was in the Garden of Eden before he fell. It probably wasn't very long. And so Adam and Eve were there. They fell into sin. And, of course, the curse came upon the earth and the results of the curse. And then there were two men that were born to them named Cain and Abel. And you know the account. Cain tragically kills Abel. And then Seth is born in compensation for the slaying of Abel. And at this point in time, as history begins to unfold itself, there's a trend that begins to occur. And it's a rather disheartening and alarming trend, and that's this: the Cainites, now not the Canaanites, but the descendants of Cain, start to intermarry with the descendants of Seth. And the descendants of Seth, they were called the sons of God, they were godly people. And they begin to intermarry with those that were descendants of Cain. And the descendants of Cain, for the most part, were characterized by great immorality and wickedness. And that resulted in gross wickedness and sin coming upon the earth. And there's a pattern of hostility that begins on the earth during that time, and eventually it's going to culminate in the flood. But at any rate, it sets a trend or a pattern of hostility and friction that's going to follow the righteous and the wicked down through time. And we see it carried out in Isaac and Ishmael. There's friction between them. We see it between Jacob and Esau, all the way down through the Bible, right on into this current world that we're living in. There's friction between the godly and the wicked. So that brings us to the next major event, and that would be the flood. This I do want you to remember. And also creation. I don't remember if I told you this, but put a star beside creation, 4000 BC, and then there's a star beside the next event, which is the flood, occurring probably about 2500 BC. About 2500 BC. And we know that the sin and the wickedness of man provoked the wrath of God, and God looked upon his creation. And the imagination of man's heart was evil continually. The earth was filled with violence. And God repented that he'd even created man. And he therefore sent a global flood to destroy man and beast. And then Noah was saved along with his family plus the animals, spending about 1 year in that storm-tossed ark. And that would be about 2500 BC. Well, then we come to another major event. the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel being about 2400 B.C. 2400 B.C. That's only 100 years after the flood. I mean, the heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And so following the flood, the whole earth united itself together to form one world government, independent of God now, along with a false religious system. And that's what they were really trying to do, in total defiance to God's command, to scatter and to populate the earth. So what God had to do then, God intervened and he confused their tongues. And so these two bricklayers are working together, trying to talk to each other, and they're getting frustrated. They can't understand each other. And they're all foiled in their plot for world government, and they're scattered. And what that resulted in, of course, many languages, and as the people were scattered accordingly, they collected themselves together according to their language. And they dispersed throughout the then known world, and they went down into Africa, and they went up into Europe. And then as they isolated themselves, and as they were speaking their own individual languages, there were various races that developed. And there's characteristics that we have in those races. There are certain people that are black in color because they're down in Africa. And then there are certain people in other areas, maybe up in northern Europe, that are fair-haired and light in color and so forth. And that all came from this confusion of the nations. But really, man is traced all the way back to Adam and Eve. And so we're really all from the same family. So that'd be the Tower of Babel. Now, the next major event is Abraham. And again, I'd like to have you put a star beside this. So a star beside the Tower of Babel, and then a star beside Abraham. Abraham lived around 2100 B.C. Yes?
Do you want to start the Tower of Babel?
Yes. Maybe I didn't mention that, but the Tower of Babel, I'd like to have you put a star beside that, too, so that you know that date. And then Abraham, a star beside him. He's certainly a star in God's heaven, isn't he? Yeah, there's only one star, Jesus, the bright morning star, and all the rest of us are just a flashlight battery pretty much going, but Jesus was that bright morning star. But Abraham lived in 2100 B.C., the founder of the Hebrew nation. That's the real significance with him. The founder of the Hebrew nation, and of course the progenitor of the Israelites. And God called him from a country called the Ur of the Chaldees. Later it developed into ancient Babylon. God called him from the Ur of the Chaldees, down there just north of the Persian Gulf, and he journeyed all the way to Canaan's land, and there God promised him that his offspring would grow into a great nation. And God made what is commonly called the Abrahamic covenant with him, that in his seed all the nations of the earth would be blessed. Of course, he became an ancestor of Christ. Then the next major individual is Isaac. Don't have to put a star beside him. I won't require you to memorize his dates, but Isaac lived from about 2065 to 1885 B.C. 2065 to 1885 B.C. The son of Abraham and Sarah by a miraculous birth, given to them in their old age when they were past childbearing age. And so it was a total miracle of God. Also, he became the father of Jacob and Esau, two manner of men in the womb of Rebekah, and also became an ancestor of Christ. And so, therefore, the Abrahamic covenant really is ratified and continued on in him. And that's why we really include him. He's one of the major links in the history of Israel and Messiah. So the covenant continues on in him. And then we come to Jacob. Again, no star beside him. But Jacob lived around 2005 B.C. to about 1858 B.C. 2005 to 1858. Amazes me how they can come up with these dates. So they haven't found a tombstone over there. Jacob, 2005, 1858. Here lies my soul in peace. You know, they haven't found anything like that. But somehow through dating the genealogies and so forth, they're coming up with this. We know that Jacob was the twin of Esau, brother of Esau. We know that he also deceptively gained the birthright from Esau. One time he bought it, and another time he basically stole it through deception. But at any rate, he did become the father of the Jewish nation. He did have 12 sons that then became the nucleus of the nation of Israel, the father of the 12 tribes. And of course, we're talking about tribes like Reuben and Asher and Gad and Judah and Issachar and all the other tribes as well. know that God gave him a marvelous spiritual experience. God took this man who basically had a lot of evil tendencies. His name was Jacob, the deceiver and supplanter. And God gloriously transformed him into Israel, a prince with God, see? And so he became the founder, pretty much then, direct founder of the Hebrew nation, producing the 12 sons from whom the 12 tribes came. And then we find that Jacob went down into Egypt along with his sons. And the next major event then is the nation of Israel in Egypt. Again, no star beside this. The nation of Israel in the land of Egypt. Now that would be from about 1875 to 1450 B.C. 1875 to 1450 B.C. And this occurred through the selling of Joseph into Egypt, and his brothers were jealous of him. They in turn sold him into Egypt, and it was a malicious thing that they had done, but God worked it for his glory, and Joseph was down there eventually after spending a couple years in prison, elevated second only to Pharaoh, and lived under a great oppression most of the time. That is, the nation of Israel did, but God eventually sent the great emancipator to them. So that brings us to the next point then, Moses. And this one has a star beside it. Moses, in connection now with the Exodus. We can date the Exodus. You see, the closer we get to the time of Christ, the more accurate these dates become. This is a fairly accurate date now. The Exodus occurred around 1450 B.C. About 1450 B.C. God raised up this great prophet of God, Moses, and he became the great lawgiver of Israel. God called Moses to deliver his people from the Egyptian bondage. It took 10 plagues to convince Egypt to release the Israelites. And then after those 10 devastating plagues, Moses, following the direction of God, led them through the Red Sea and on into the wilderness, headed for the Promised Land, and meanwhile, the Egyptian army drowns in the Red Sea. But that commenced in 1450 B.C., that deliverance from Egypt. And at this point in time, we find Israel in the wilderness, and there we find the law being given to them on Mount Sinai. We find them rebelling and kicking against God's pricks, wandering about for 40 years. Meanwhile, the old generation is dying out. Approximately 70 people, I believe, every day for 40 years dying, and they're burying them. And the new generation arises, and eventually it's the new generation that's going to arise and go in and possess the land. And meanwhile, there's another man of God that is instrumental in the leadership of Israel, Joshua. Joshua. And so about 1405 B.C., Joshua took the banner from Moses and spearheaded the great campaign to take over Canaan's land. He's the successor of Moses. He led the conquest of the Promised Land, Joshua. And, of course, he started ruling then, 1405 B.C. And the great motto and theme of Israel when they entered into the Promised Land was to enter, overcome, and occupy. And that was their rally cry for a number of years, to enter, to overcome, and to occupy. And that's just what they did for the most part. Well, then we enter a very sour time in their history, a very bleak, very dismal time, the time of the judges. And this is a time around 1375 B.C., the time of the judges, 1375 B.C. It's also a time known by historians as the theocracy. Theocracy, meaning that God is the ruler. There was really no one ruler over Israel during this time. A long period of time, and they didn't really have one ruler. Now, there were times when they backslid, and they fell into great moral degradation, and what God did at that time, he raised up a judge, and the judge would deliver them, but still they were under the leadership of God. It was a theocracy. And the problem is that they compromised their faith with the surrounding pagan nations. So God had to raise up 13 judges to deliver the people, and eventually it culminated in Samuel. And this man of God called Samuel was the 14th judge. And then also there's a new turning point now because he also became the first prophet since Moses. So Samuel was also a prophet as well as a judge. So you've got that time of the judges. And I'll tell you, it was a dark time in Israel. All you have to read is the book of Judges to find how far they really backslid. The Bible says every man was doing that which was right in his own eyes. Well, that sounds a lot like America, kind of. You know, everyone's doing their own thing and clamoring for their own voice and their own pursuit and so forth, and that just leads you down pell-mell the pathway of destruction. Then there's a period of time, and this is a new period now, called the Kings, beginning around 1040
B.C. Now, right about now, we're starting to enter a real important phase of their history. The kings, now this changes from what is called a theocracy to a monarchy. A monarchy. 1040 B.C. is when the kings began. So about 1040 B.C., the monarchy began, and Israel demanded a king, and God said, well, I want to be your king, but Israel would not accept that, and so God commanded Samuel to appoint their first king, whose name was Saul. And Saul became the first king in Israel, and then there were three kings that followed shortly on the heels of Saul, David, Solomon, and Rehoboam. And there's a little flash of glory there. Israel arises to their zenith of power under the leadership of David and Solomon, but it's short-lived. You know, it's not much longer than 80 years or so. And at that time, they're one of the most powerful nations in the world at that specific point in time. But then Rehoboam comes to power, and with Rehoboam, the picture totally changes. And so during the time of Rehoboam, the nation divided. And that's in 931 B.C., 931 B.C. Now that, I'd like to have you put a star beside. 931 B.C. Very key point in their history. And if you remember the account, this man called Rehoboam came to power. Solomon had died. Solomon was a man that had spent a lot of the tax money on his own personal aggrandizement. And Rehoboam was going to continue in his footsteps. And the elders of Israel said, now Rehoboam, if you're a wise man, knock out the taxes. Don't tax the people so heavily. And if you do that, treat the people kindly, they'll serve you. And then, of course, Rehoboam, being the foolish man he was, turned to the young men and said, well, how about you? What advice would you give me? And they said, let them have it. Let the men underneath you, let the nation of Israel, tax them heavy. Tell them that if you think Solomon taxed you, you wait till you see, now I send you the bill. And so that's what he did. He said, I'm going to tax you so heavily, it's going to look like Solomon wasn't doing anything at all. And at that point in time, there was a split in the nation, and there were the northern 10 tribes that formed their own nation. And so from 931 to 722 B.C., the northern 10 tribes were a separate nation. From 931 to 722 B.C. I'd like to have you remember that date, 722 B.C. So they lasted there for that period of time. And sometimes this northern kingdom is called the kingdom of Israel now, and sometimes they're called Ephraim, and sometimes they're called other titles as well. But when it talks about Israel and Ephraim, basically from this point in time on now, we're talking about the northern 10 tribes. Now, this really ended in defeat for Israel. They had, I believe, 19 kings. Every single one of them was horribly wicked. And because of that, God gave them this allotted period of time. Eventually, it culminated in the Assyrians coming down, conquering them, and carrying them away captive. And meanwhile, the Assyrians tried to go down and take Judah as well, the southern kingdom, and they failed because Judah had a couple godly kings with enough sense to turn to God. And so meanwhile, you've got the northern 10 tribes, but then you've got the southern 3 tribes, and I believe it's Benjamin, Levi, and Judah, but you've got the southern 3 tribes continuing until 605 B.C. So they lasted a lot longer. They lasted another, what, 100 and, you know, about 105 years longer than their northern brethren lasted. So 605 is a real key date, too. Put a star beside that. So the northern kingdom from 931 to 722 and the southern kingdom from 931 to 605 B.C. Both of those, I'd like to have you remember those dates. Now, if you're wondering how we get a total of 13 tribes here, 10 in the north and 3 in the south, there was one tribe, the tribe of Joseph, that divided into two different tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. So in the final analysis, you really end up with 13 tribes, but really, it's only 12 tribes because one is split in half. So there are the three tribes then in the south, and they were conquered by the kingdom of Babylon. The kingdom of Babylon. And it took Babylon quite a while before they actually defeated all of Judah. And the fall of Jerusalem did not really occur until 586 B.C. And then in 586 B.C., they fell. That is the city of Jerusalem. So it took the Babylonians quite a while to overcome them. And again, the reason being they had a couple good kings interspersed in that period of time that turned to God. And when they turned to God, then God, of course, delayed judgment. Well, we find that Judah returns to the land in 536 B.C. So they're in Babylon for 70 years, and the 70-year captivity is dated from 605 to 536. Now, again, this is a date I would like to have you remember. The northern kingdom never returned, never came back again. They were carried away by Assyria and dispersed throughout the world, never came back again to Palestine, and won't come back until probably most of them in the millennium. But Judah did return after 70 years, and this was a time of Persian rule now, and there was a man called Cyrus the Great, and the Bible talks about him in Isaiah 175 years before the man was even born, calls him by name, and God raised him up and used him to send the Jews back to Palestine. Now what I'd like to do, let me draw a little sketch for you on the board. I want you to really get this period of history accurately. So you start off with, let's say, David, and then after David, there's Solomon, and then after David, or after Solomon, there's a king called Rehoboam. Well, right at this point in time then, the kingdom is divided. So, and that's in, well, 931 B.C. There's a major division, and one portion of the kingdom forms Israel, or Ephraim. That happened in 931, and this is the northern kingdom, and it would be the 10 tribes, and they lasted until 722 B.C., and of course they went to Assyria. And boy, what an impressive time that was when you read about the Assyrians, how wicked they were. And then the other kingdom, the southern kingdom, and that would be called Judah, they lasted until 605 B.C., and of course then they went to Babylon. Now what I want to do is just kind of carry the same picture over from Babylon. Well, I can do it right here. So in 605 they went to Babylon, and as many of them, there were actually three different stages of the captivity. The Babylonians came down in 605, and they took one group of the Jews back to Babylon. They came down in a little couple years later. They took a second group, and then they came down in 586, and they totally annihilated the city of Jerusalem, burned the temple down, and took the final exiles into Babylon. So there were really three stages of it. But anyway, the Jews were in Babylon until about five... Well, let me draw it like this. Let me draw Jerusalem. Jerusalem falls in 586 B.C., and then the first return of the Jews was in 536 B.C. And then from that point on in time, it was the Jews that filled the land of Palestine. So that by the time of Jesus, of course, they were therefore called the Jews. That's all that was left. The northern 10 tribes were missing. However, there were a few remnants of the northern 10 tribes that did have enough sense to come down into the southern kingdom before the Assyrians came. And so you do have certain remnants of those northern 10 tribes preserving their seed even in the southern kingdom. And that's why periodically you'll read about various people in the New Testament being of some of those northern 10 tribes. And remember, was it Anna of the tribe of what? Asher? Anna in Luke chapter 2, is it? It talks about her waiting for God. And it talks about some of these other individuals from some of the northern tribes, because some of them did come down into the southern kingdom before the Assyrian captivity. Okay, so we've got the Jews back in the land again. And then during this time when they came back, Judah is restored under the leadership of a couple men. One of them is called Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was one of their leaders. And then another leader was Ezra. And also another one, of course, was Nehemiah. And then long about 515 B.C., the temple was rebuilt. And it was called Zerubbabel's Temple. Nothing like the original temple. In fact, the old people that had seen the original Solomon's Temple wept when they saw Zerubbabel's. No comparison. The young people that had never seen Solomon's rejoiced for joy, but the old people wept. And so you find the Jews in the land, and then the last prophet is the prophet Malachi, and he's prophesying around 400 B.C. 400 B.C. And with Malachi, we close the Old Testament, and we really read nothing more of the history of the Jews in the Bible. That closes their history. There is another period of history called the intertestamental period that is not talked about in the Bible, but that's the time of writing and the time of history between the Old and New Testament, that time of 400 years between the end of Malachi and the birth of Jesus. And it does have a real interesting time of history there. Are there any questions on this? Do you basically understand this outline now? Going through it real rapidly. Any questions on it? Yes.
You started the date of return to captivity as well. I was just thinking about the
start of the 536. Okay. Yes, 536. We should put a star beside that too. That's the last date. In fact, let me go through and repeat all the ones that should have a star beside them, just so that we can be sure on this. The first one would be creation, 4000 BC, a star beside that. The next one is the flood, 2500 BC. Then the next one is the Tower of Babel, 2400 BC. And then Abraham, 2100 BC. Then the Exodus, 1450 BC. And then the division of the nation, 931. And then northern Israel to Assyria in 722. And then Judah lasting until 605 BC, and then it goes to Babylon, so 605 should have a star beside it. And then finally, the last star would be 536. The Jews return to the land again, and that would be it. So if you memorize those dates, then it will really help you. It'll put a real time fix in your mind. Any other questions? Yes. Uh-huh.
And then another for 722.
Yes. Okay, well, here's what happened in 722. In 931, the nation divided into Israel and Judah, and then Israel lasted until 722. Then in 722, they were carried to Assyria. So that's what that significance would be. Yes, they lasted as a nation. And perhaps the confusion is I simply use the term Israel. See? And when you start using that term, then you start wondering, was it before the captivity or after the captivity? Exactly what period of time are we talking about? And it does become kind of confusing at times. You just kind of have to look in the Bible what the context is talking about when it starts talking about Israel, because often it will be referring to the northern 10 tribes now. Any other questions? Well, I'm supposed to give you a little test on the introductory information, not today or not tomorrow, but I think what we'll do, we'll have it next week. And we're supposed to have a test on this. And you do need to know the dates that I gave you, as well as some of the other things that we talked about in the opening section here. So it's not a real massive test, but you do need to study. And, of course, it's right from the very beginning. And we talked about an introduction to geography and archaeology and Bible customs. So you want to read through that section. Now, as far as actual Bible lands, I'm not going to ask you to put them on a map or anything like that. But I would suggest you just simply read down through what I said. I'm not going to ask you facts or figures, how high was this mountain, where was this country located, but you might want to just read through what I said about those Bible lands as well. So we'll have that, either Thursday or Friday. What's better? Thursday? Thursday? Okay, we'll have it on Thursday then. Okay, next Thursday. Test on the introduction. Okay, well, with that in mind, we're going to begin an entirely new topic. We're going to jump right into the heart of what we're really talking about here. We're going to start talking about the world powers of biblical times. And this is what we mean by people and lands. And actually, when you study your Bible carefully, you'll notice that there are really six great governments that dominated the pre-Christian world. Six great governments that the Bible talks about. Let me list them for you, and I'd like to list them in the order of their power, the order in which they were reigning. I'll also give you some dates in which they were reigning supremely. First of all, of course, we start with the Egyptian Empire. That's one of the first, in fact, that is the first major power that we read about in the Bible, as far as a real world power. And the Egyptian Empire was in power from about 1600 to 1200 BC. 1600 to 1200 BC, which is the precise time in which Israel made their sojourn into Egypt. And they're actually down there in Egypt. And here they grew from about 70 souls to approximately 3.5 million. And that's happening during this very time. The second major kingdom is the Assyrian Empire. And the Assyrian Empire was in power from about 900 to 607 BC. 900 to 607 BC, and of course they were the kingdom that destroyed the northern nation of Israel in 722 BC, as well as exacting tribute from Judah and going down and hassling Judah a lot as well. And then thirdly, we have the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian, that would be from 605 to 536. 605 to 536, the kingdom that destroyed Judah and Jerusalem. And they carried Judah away captive for 70 years. They lasted only 70 years. The exact amount of time that Judah was in captivity, that's how long they lasted as a nation. And at the end of that 70 years, God said, it's time to send the Jews home. Babylon said, we don't want to. God said, okay, Persians conquer Babylon. And the Persians conquered Babylon, and the Jews came back home again. God always gets his way. And then number four is the Persian Empire. The Persian Empire. And that would be from 536 to 331 BC. 536 to 331 BC. And they are the ones that allowed the Jews to return from captivity. Not only did they allow the Jews to go back to their land again, but Cyrus said, here, let me give you some money. And not only that, he said, here, let me help you build your temple again. And they actually aided and abetted the Jews as far as their restoration to the land again. That's the Persian Empire, 536 to 331. And then the next one would be the Greek Empire. The Greek Empire, spearheaded, of course, by Alexander the Great, who was the great founder of this empire. And then later on it was divided amongst his generals. But it lasted from 331 to 146 B.C. 331 to 146 B.C. had a direct bearing on Bible history, although it isn't talked about in the Bible. We're in that time of silence now, in between Malachi and the book of Matthew. But during that time of silence, there were two kings that we're going to look at. There was a king called Ptolemy down in Egypt, and then a king up in Syria called the Seleucids, and actually their families then, their descendants, ruled in those areas, and they were very, very instrumental in changing and shaping the history of Israel. There was a real power struggle, and the Ptolemies and the Seleucids were actually Greeks. And we'll talk about them here in the following weeks. And then finally, of course, the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, probably the greatest of them all as far as just massiveness and military strength and might and power. The Roman Empire lasted from 146 B.C. to A.D. 476. Now, that is a long period of time. From 146 B.C. to A.D. 476. And if you think about that, that's more than three times the history of America. America's been around a couple hundred years, and the Roman Empire was more than three times longer than America has been. And, of course, they're the empire that ruled when Christ came, and during the time of the Roman Empire, the church was formed and spread. Now, I want to just kind of caution you something about, as far as looking at maps, when you look at these empires, I don't have time to talk about this, I'll talk about it tomorrow, but the boundaries fluctuate depending on what period of time you look at them. I'll tell you about that tomorrow. Yes. The Seleucids, both the Ptolemies and Seleucids were Greeks. Oh, okay. Ptolemy was Egypt and Seleucid was Syria. Syria, right. The Syrians.